I think we may want to transition now to Senator Cortese. Thanks for joining us today. We were adjusting our schedule there a little bit. So we had prepared a list of questions, and I think you've seen these.
I think so.
And so if you want to go through these, or if you have other topics as well you want to talk through,
okay,
feel free. There's a microphone there, and the floor is yours. You've got about 30 minutes.
Yeah, maybe I can, first of all, good morning, everyone. thank you. Thank you for welcoming me. I appreciate that very much and inviting me here. And the person in the back I was talking to when I came in is someone you might recognize from attending meetings once in a while, Zach Contini, who's one of our field reps. That's their official title. They're sort of a legislative aide in the district office. And I do want to explain that before I get into these, just by way of background context, we have a district office here. It's on Bascom Avenue. We essentially just made the decision to take over Jim Bell's old space because it seems central, very central to this district. It's one of those kind of things where, these locations, when you have a district of a million people and you get one district office, it's pretty imperfect. It's a little painful for just about anybody to get there unless you're very close by. Probably here is about as close as you get, right? But we have about half a dozen staff total, if you count the intern, I guess, in the district office. And we have an approximate similar size staff in the state capitol, actually in an office building next to the state capitol, because that's how it's done up there now. So the district office is very focused on constituent services, but also they're very conversant with legislation that's pending, not just my bill package, but the other 2,950 bills that are going on up there. So if you're picking up on something that impacts you or something you love or even a hobby or something like that, I mean, all this happens, of course, with legislation. Feel free to contact either office, really. The district office is very good at that. But my job now, different than the years I spent in local government, is divided up a little bit differently. It's a whole bunch of introducing legislation, bills that would affect 40 million people in many cases, sometimes only this district. But oftentimes, if you look at our bill package, of course, you'll see legislation that's what we would call statewide legislation. Obviously, that wasn't something I was doing when I was a county supervisor for 12 years or vice mayor of the city, a council member like Rosemary, council member, I should use your title. Secondly, constituent services, but we've always been that way. That's really kind of a constant. It's just a different level of office that we're coming from, right? In other words, it was almost in some ways, easier as a council member and as a county supervisor to say, look, just call our office regardless of which level of government the issue might reside in, and we'll hook you up, we'll connect you. We still do that. That philosophy is alive and well in our office, and every staff member knows it. And no matter what policy thing they're working on, if they get a call from one of you, they're gonna, no matter what they think or where they think it is, federal, state, city, county, they're gonna drop what they're doing, connect you, and stay with that issue long enough to know that you're getting help, meaning you can go off to work or whatever your day's activities are and know somebody is trying to make that connection for you, and will get back to you and make sure the connection is made. So that's just a promise and a kind of a culture of our office. The reason I said it's almost a little easier from the local government standpoint is because we're kind of going in the reverse direction a lot of times now. Instead of walking 50 feet away to another supervisor or to the county executive, just calling over to a well-known colleague in the city of San Jose. As a county supervisor, I was representing mostly San Jose at the time. Now we've got San Jose, Montesorino, Campbell, Saratoga, Cupertino, all of those council members, all of those city managers. The county executive is no longer one elevator button away from me. The other supervisors are no longer 50 feet away. So we work a little harder to make those connections now sometimes. And I really want to commend the council member for this district, who is well versed in everything I just said in terms of the culture of constituent services and helping people directly and getting on it. And so, you know, that's an example of an office we have no problem getting responses from, but they're not all built the same. So, as you know, because I doubt there's anybody here who hasn't tried to get help from the bureaucracy or from a local official or a state official at some point. So it sometimes can get pretty bogged down. We want to be helpful with that. I want to go to these questions now. I guess the other thing I should say, instead of pure legislation, you know, one of the big things that we do in Sacramento, of course, is budget stuff, not just the approval and the fashioning of the state budget, which was over $300 billion last year, and certain earmarks or funding priorities for our district, if we can get them. But we're also at times trying to attach funding to the legislative efforts that we're making. For example, this year we have a bill to extend the age of foster care for transitional age foster care. That comes with a fiscal tag, a price tag. So we have to run the legislation, right? Get the legislation out there, frame it, and then also at the same time engage very directly in the budget process. So I think many of you know everything I just said about how my job works, but fundamentally, just to put it bluntly, there's a whole bunch of people up there in Sacramento that have bill ideas, and that's what they are, they're ideas. I mean, the governor with a stroke of the pen can ignore it, veto it, or sign it, right? That he has 1,000 times more power than any one of us, and a lot of them are bad ideas. And some are ideas that are kind of like the Winchester Mystery House. You're walking through the bill and you can't figure out where exactly it's going. Sometimes we, amongst ourselves, say this is kind of a crazy job because we're just dealing with a couple thousand, sometimes 3,000 ideas a year that are oftentimes new. And it is, you know, it is part of what I have to do in terms of doing my job. A little bit different than, you know, the volume of things at local government. So we had 12 bills signed into law last year. 7 the year before, so 19 in my first 2 years. I'm not going to do what a lot of people do and start reciting chapter and verse about all that because it gets pretty boring, but we're happy to give you that information. You know, it's so easy to do now with a press of a button. And same thing with the bill package going forward. I have over 20 bills in the bill package this year, and we're happy to get that information to you in terms of the specifics on any of those. And honestly, on the idea side, on the plus side of introducing new ideas, if you have one, please let us know. I've always found at every level of government, the best ideas for where government needs to go next come from the community. And so, sometimes that's eliminating something, not adding something, of course. But we want you to know that that's how we feel. And this county and the city is, flawed as we feel local government might be sometimes, is a leader in the state. And there's nothing better for me. I've kind of made a living out of it the last couple of years of walking into a committee room or a legislative hearing and saying, this idea, this is already happening in Santa Clara County or the city of San Jose. We just want to replicate it across all 58 counties or all the cities in the state. And we get a good reception from that typically because just about every legislator in both houses, they know the reputation of this place overall is a place that does things right. And it also eliminates problems from the bureaucracy, as I mentioned before, You imagine the Social Services Agency or the Department of Transportation, you know, getting the first questions they want to ask if you haven't done something somewhere already, if it's brand new, nobody's done it, you know the kind of pushback you get, right? It's not going to work. We tried it before. We don't know how to do it. We don't know how to pay for it. We don't know how to implement it. Oftentimes, those things have all been answered by a really strong county program or city program. And I'll tell you, that's happening right now in the legislature. There's programs the city of San Jose has on firearms and things like that. For better or worse, whether you agree with those or not, folks from as far away as San Diego are introducing legislation. They come over to my house, my office, and say, hey, this came from your city, and we want to, you know, I know I'm from San Diego, but I want to introduce a bill to extend this across the state because your city has done such a good job. So I think that's something to be proud of as people who are from this area, all of us. Back to these questions now. And hopefully, I'll remember to talk to you before I run out of my 30 minutes here after I answer these questions, because I don't want to stop that from happening, about one or two bills that I introduced this year, and one of them being with regard to the fentanyl crisis, because I think that's one of our top three highest priority bills and probably the highest priority for our youth in the state right now. So, question. With all the problems, I do have these written down here, with all the problems in the state, can you tell us where did the state surplus go? There is an interesting constraint or rule that we have to deal with when we have surpluses as large as we've had for the last 2 years. And it comes out of the old Jarvis Gann work, the same entities that brought us Prop 13, you know, with voter approval, but what we call it is a GAN limit. And a GAN limit says that you need to take that reserve and you need to put it back into infrastructure, because that's considered, you know, bridges, roads, potholes, whatever. That money is going back to the taxpayers in the mind of GAN, okay? Or you can send money out. You could literally just give rebates. You can put reserves aside. You can do that up to a limit. But you can't just use the money to stand up new programs one after another after another. There are severe constraints on our ability to do that. And so what we saw out of just using the last year's huge surplus, over $90 billion, was this joy that we had money, most of it coming from the capital gain side of income taxes, but you know, some discomfort, if you will, amongst legislators who wanted to do some things like stand up programs, more programs for the homeless. And the governor, of course, feels the same way. There was $12 billion in the budget last year. It wasn't easy to add another billion to that or to double it with the GAN limit, because the GAN limit says that money, that surplus, shouldn't be going there. It should be going to transportation infrastructure. Think the BART extension. Think, again, roads, highways, Caltrans. Infrastructure, though, not programs. So I think somewhere there's a question here about Caltrans litter cleanup. If I had my way, one of the programs, and probably the most important one I would stand up on the Caltrans side, would be programmatic, not infrastructure. Instead of having only two people on the Caltrans crew for this entire county trying to go from interchange to interchange to clean it up, I would say let's double down or quadruple that, really. Let's get crews that can do four times that much work, because that's about what we need. But you had this limitation, if I'm being clear about that, on adding programmatic, on adding full-time equivalent employees, for example, or positions. And it's a tax. I'm not criticizing that. I mean, there's a certain philosophy that says don't keep growing the size of government on the personnel side, the employment side, right? So I could give you an entire list of where the money went, you know, in terms of the top lines of the state budget. But if you just, you know, were to look outside at the things that we see all around us that are bricks and mortar that are paid for by the state of California, that's mostly how that budget was built. One of those things was $54 billion in climate investments, meaning infrastructure to address the climate crisis. So EV infrastructure investment, solar, wind power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There were dozens of bills that came to fruition the last 2 weeks of the session, last August, which were designed to take advantage of the GAN limit, if you will, on the, meaning their infrastructure, but their infrastructure to address the climate crisis. That money's not out the door yet. One of the things, as a quick aside, that I'm doing, I chair, I'm on several committees, transportation, housing, et cetera, but I chair the Senate Labor and Employment Committee, and one of the things we're trying to make sure of is that as those investments go out, they're efficiently creating private sector employment, that we're not just dumping money into low-wage jobs to the tune of $52 billion. So we'll see where that goes, but we're doing a lot of work in that regard.
I'm Roberta Whitty. I'm from English Estates neighborhood. When you talk about the new ideas and the infrastructure for like environment, I saw back east that they had solar panels on the power poles in the city. So when the city lights go out, the lights still work. So new ideas like that, I'm assuming, take a long time to get in the pipeline.
Yeah,
can we see changes like that for solar, for the grid?
Yeah, the difference is speed or lack thereof was the biggest adjustment for me going from county to state. At the county, there's five members. If you have three votes, you can put solar panels on light poles or wherever you want them next Tuesday. I mean, you can approve that next Tuesday, right? And I mean, we had a situation where when COVID started and kids could not get, did not have hotspots or devices or internet access at all. They weren't in a wireless area, they didn't have it in their homes. In 1 week, we wired $7 million over to the County Office of Education so that they could close that gap. And the city did a similar amount back at that time, maybe a lesser amount, but a complementary amount. At the state of California, you would introduce the bill in December or January, and then we'd wait around for all the rest of the bills to come in. February 17th is the deadline. And then a couple weeks later, now committee hearings start. Those committee hearings start in the House of Origin, if you're in the Senate, if you're in the Assembly, like Evan Lowe or Ash Kalra, same thing. And those bills finally cross paths in the summer. You know, they go to the other house. And we don't hear them oftentimes on the floor of the Senate or the Assembly until August. In the meanwhile, we have to get that massive budget adopted by June, by statute. So if your bill doesn't make it, I mean, this is the hard part. You get down there, everything's fine. It's getting, the committees are all voting for it. Sometimes you have bipartisan support. Everything looks hunky-dory. And then you get to the very last committee, the Appropriations Committee, and they say, I don't know, the cost of these solar panels that you're talking about might be a little too much. But they don't actually even say that. They just pre-veto your bill there. They basically just say, it's like cuts from high school sports or something. They just post Cortese, you know, 10 bills that survived, got to our committee, 8 approved, the other 2 aren't. You have no idea, no discussion, no debate, no nothing. So it's slow and it can be a little bit opaque and a little bit frustrating. So, council member, always appreciate the fact that you can put you guys call it a memo or a referral, it's like a local bill, and get that heard right away, you know, maybe one or two steps they have that ready to go. What can you do to make Caltrans speed up its highway trash collection and graffiti abatement? I mean, we just need personnel, as I said. As far as I'm concerned, it's ridiculous that we have two people rotating around. They have good equipment, they have dump trucks, they have everything they need, but it's just, yeah. Now, let me, on the plus side, there is another staff member, Zach's, one of his colleagues in the office, Roy Tongahaga, and Roy has weekly meetings with Caltrans, and typically city and county are represented in those meetings as well. So any hot spots that are in our district. I mean, what's ludicrous about that is there's more hot spots than there are not hot spots, right? So, but that's still the nomenclature they use, probably from a time when you'd really have maybe three or four hot spots in the whole county, pre-homeless encampments and everything else that's going on now. But that's the nomenclature they use. Important thing is, get those into Roy, get them into Zach, he'll give them to Roy, get them to me directly if you want, I'll make sure Roy prioritizes it. I weigh in on those sometimes, so I get a Friday report every week from Roy that tells me, directly to me, that tells me where they're focused, and I keep track of that. And the following week, the progress report on that site is displeasing to me, then I get a message directly to them, to Caltrans, and let them know they need to prioritize. We don't want another week to go by. Again, it's unfortunately, one of those zero-sum games. You prioritize one site, and that just means, I can do that, and I will. But somebody else is going to get shorted, somewhere in the district, just because they can only get to so many places per weekend. And then they got places like scenic highways, like Highway 130, which is Mount Hamilton Road, or the same thing on the other side of the valley, where they get this kind of ugliness, and people are trying to take a scenic drive, and it's not scenic, and people are dumping, going up there on the weekends and dumping, their trash or somebody else's trash, and it's imagine just taking one of those routes would probably take them a day and a half alone. So we need more people. But don't let that dissuade you from letting us know.
We have a couple of questions here.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Chris Giangreco. I'm with the Winchester Orchard Neighborhood Association. Hi. What we found, we have a Caltrans property up against the very southwestern edge of our neighborhood, and that's right along 280 here, just west of San Tomas Expressway. So we've had a lot of problems over the years trying to get Caltrans to get in there and clean that area up, and we finally had success by essentially contacting the right person.
Yeah.
Right person lower in the ranks, that instead of working through the bureaucratic process.
Right, right.
What opportunity is there for you to push for Caltrans to reach out directly to communities like ours so that other communities kind of successes that we had with that particular property, engagement with the public and enlisting their hands help be a key to that success?
So the people that we're dealing with in those weekly meetings are at the level you're talking about, although there's been twice when I got the actual Caltrans director on a Zoom and said, this is what you need to do. But basically on those weekly meetings, we're dealing with the team that's actually, trying to manage the area here. And we do connect, and we will connect people. Let's say you wanted to further discuss that site or any other site directly with them. Or again, we'll stay on that call with you. So we do that. We have a guy, I don't think he meant it would bother him if I mentioned his name, Don Eberhard, who kind of goes around and identifies sites. He's just a community member. He's retired. And we've had him talk directly to them from time to time, and then he feels better because he can get the update from them directly. So we're happy to be, you know, sort of, we're being a middleman anyway, if you will, but we're happy to do that on a more personal basis.
Senator, I have a question.
Yeah. So we do need to wrap up here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I stop. Yeah, I'm just trying. If we probably should have saved the questions for the end, and then
is it just a matter of funding to get more personnel out?
Yes.
And is there a way to do this? I mean, then the other thing is there. Seemingly, they get to it, but some of these signs that I showed you, those are for me. They've been up there for months, and it just gets so frustrating. I used to send requests to Caltrans, and I used to send requests to Jim Bell because I knew he was on the committee.
Right.
But it
same committee.
It's just never gets never gets resolved. So
it's a vicious cycle, really. I mean, it's no sooner we have. I came into politics as a commercial property owner. We had to have an internal policy that our maintenance people had to cover up graffiti every 24 hours because it just keeps coming back. They paint it comes back again. Okay. But let me talk to you more after. Let me try to race through these questions.
Sure.
And kind of do a lightning round,
I'm
if
done.
That's okay with the chair. But I understand the points that you're making. And yes, and two ways to get money here for any of these things, the things like this. One is if we have enough money to where the budget process allows us to do district earmarks, where I can get money just specifically for this district for a certain thing. And the year before last, I got a $2 million earmark, and I didn't give it to Caltrans. I gave it to the city of San Jose and the county to use $2 million to use to augment these efforts, knowing that no time soon where we were going to get more Caltrans employees. So let them do it, and then get the Conservation Corps out there and use that money to pay them to do it. They did some of it, but I mean, it's you hardly notice because of the extreme quantity of what's happening out there. And it, certainly homeless encampments have added to that. Without vilifying the homeless. I mean, obviously there's litter all over the place. Can I try to do just a lightning round if no one interrupts me? So can the state use mentally stable homeless people to help remove trash, graffiti, and excess vegetation from state property? Yes, but of course it has to be voluntary. And those voluntary programs already exist, and typically either community-based agencies or the county or the city will help stand up those programs, but the state allows it. You see the signs on the freeway. Anybody can adopt an area on the Caltrans side. The last two presentations by police captains talk about Prop 47. Do I support it? The idea with Prop 47 was to make sure that it was the local county jails that were dealing with the incarceration of lower level offenses, like I call theft crimes, property crimes, because you still have a 1 year incarceration availability for the judge on a misdemeanor like that, but it's not a felony. And if it's a felony, then those folks, if incarcerated, go to state prison. The difference is they get, when they get released a year later, they have a parole officer at the state of California, which has proven to be very, very ineffective compared to Santa Clara County probation officers keeping track of where those folks are in terms of reoffending. And that's a proven fact. We have gone from two-thirds reoffenses in this county on parolee releases to two-thirds non-reoffenses by having local probation officers overseeing the same types of crimes. And those, we have a what's called a reentry center here in Santa Clara County where they're literally on top of that daily. What are the plans to establish a center to treat homeless mental problems? What are your thoughts of on reestablishing mental hostels? Let us get you information on Care Court, which is the governor's new thing. The legislature approved it. It starts to go down this path. I will tell you right now, it's going to expose the lack of facility space that we have, but that's a good thing. The governor's saying he wants 30-day plans by each county for the mentally ill. In many, many of those cases, that's going to require inpatient. There's not enough inpatient facilities for those folks, and the governor's going to see that. I've been telling him that. Other people have been telling him that. But you know, now we're saying, go ahead, let's go down this path, and maybe this will force him to invest more in the facilities that we need. But we knew to need them. How much is the state spending on the homeless problem? $12 billion last year. Many, many billions the year before. If you want to know if that money's effectively getting where it needs to go, there will be an audit this year in this county, in this city. San Diego and one other city will be sort of sample cities that the state will audit the flow of its own money to see if it's getting where it needs to go, if with efficacy, you know, is it getting to where it needs to go? And we'll have much more on that later this year. And then what is being done to keep people from becoming homeless in the first place? I mean, that's what has to be done. We have 15,000 high school students every year in this state that are homeless, documented homeless, federally identified as homeless, and they're graduating every May into homelessness. I mean, we're not stopping that. You give them a diploma and say, good luck out there, because they're homeless. We can't do that. That's 1.5 times the total amount of homeless that we have in this county, which is bad. I mean, we're graduating that many in every year. Veterans are coming back 60 to 65 per month into this county. The county and the city a few years ago, I did it with Mayor Liccardo, said, let's cut that off. Let's start housing them right when they come back so we're not adding to the problem. We've got to keep doing that. And you know, there's 25% of the homeless in this county and the city are under the age of 25. In most cases, half are under the age of 18, half of the, so 12.5%. What do they do to deserve to be homeless? You know, these aren't typically mental health issues. So we need to start addressing, intervening, and preempting the issue right there. Otherwise, we're putting a Band-Aid on the problem after the fact. Okay, and this, I could guarantee you that the number one priority of virtually every legislator in both houses, 80 assembly members, 40 senators, bipartisan, and the governor's office is homelessness. So you will see continued investment regardless of GAN limits or anything else. That's investment's going to keep coming, but we got to make sure it's effective, it's doing the job, because I don't want to be standing in front of you a few years from now trying to explain why we put all these billions out and we have more tents up than ever before. So believe me, everyone has that top of mind, not just me. So happy to help you on the litter stuff. We'd like to work with you individually on that a little bit more. Sorry, I went over.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time.